you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It feels like forever, but we're back with the Calling Podcast for season three. We will be here every episode of the whole season. And as usual, we are going to have with us our esteemed guests, co-creator, executive producer, Ryan Condal.
Hello.
And executive producer and wordsmith, Wes Took.
Glad to be here.
Hey, guys, how have you been?
Look how glad to be here he is. Look at that look on his face.
He's smiling, Brad. He is very happy to be back, as we all are. And also, not in the studio, but out in the ether, and so happy to have him. We are welcoming back to the podcast executive producer and all-around badass Will Bowman, a.k.a. the amazing Josh Holloway. Hello, sir.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
We are great. So
from
glad to have you back.
Undisclosed location.
No, he's always in a bunker in an undisclosed That's important. No one. Yes, that's special.
Of course, I've got my equipment on ready. I got my dirt bike ready, my go bag ready. Man, this show, it does something to you.
If he gives one wrong answer, he's bolting. We're just going to hear an engine flare and off he goes.
Yeah.
But so I'll behave.
That's it.
I'll ask good questions.
You got to be under 4 minutes and you got to be out of there. That's the Bowman rule. All right.
Well, let's get
glad to be back.
Yes. I'm thrilled to have you back. Let's talk about first episode of the season, McKee. I know what it means, but I want Ryan and Wes to tell me what that means so that it's a little bit of insight into this episode.
They were the hill people of the French resistance against the Nazis in World War II. And given the themes that inspired the show and the real histories that we like to retell through a science fiction prism on Colony, it just felt like the right way to call the episode because, people think of the French resistance, typically think of Paris and secret BBC radio broadcasts and laborers and farmers fighting against the Nazi occupation. But a lot of the resistance against the Nazis was done in the countryside,
yeah.
In the rural parts of the country. And that was very meaningful and important part of it. And now our family, the Bowmans, have found themselves out in the wilds beyond the Colony of Los Angeles.
Yes. So last time we saw them, of course, they were driving off from the LA block, total rendition happening in their rearview mirror. And now we are in this very rural setting. Once they were driving away, you guys could have started the season anywhere. So when you guys started the prep for season three, basically, what were the thoughts about where you wanted us to first see them as the episode came back?
Well, we had a contractual obligation for Josh to have to fly fish this season. So we wanted to start.
I like that writer.
That's right, buddy. And I'm putting it right back in. But this time, you're my net boy, Wes.
I don't know what that means, but I'm pretty terrified. Yeah,
hey, sounds sexy.
Can I just stop you right there and tell you a little something about that moment
there?
First of all, epic. Epic starting in the woods. Mm-hmm. The forests of the Pacific Northwest, BC, insane. So it was beautiful, epic, amazing change and add such a dimension to our show, I feel. But then I go the fly fishing thing. I'm so excited to do it until the farmer that brought the trout says, if there's one cardinal sin you can do, it's dropping this trout in this water system. It is not the correct species for this. If you drop it, you're screwed. I was like, oh, God. So I have to, act like I'm having so much fun with my daughter and, laughing and stuff, which I was. But at the same time, in the back of my mind, I was like, don't you ruin the entire Canadian fishing. They will string you up. So I was holding that trout tight and loose at the same time. I was like, good God, don't drop it.
So as we see it gasping for breath, we know that it's maybe a little tighter than it normally would be.
We would like to take this opportunity to apologize to Canada.
I'm delicate with ladies and with
the trout.
But they scared me, for sure.
Well, you know what? I never would have known it. So that's amazing insight right there. The trout and you looked perfectly happy in that scene. That was pretty amazing. But that is...
We were told it was animatronic.
CG budget for this year.
Right.
And then a nice piece of foreshadowing for the rest of the season. It was pouring during that scene.
Yes. We were watching... We were watching, and we know that it's just been, it was, you're there in the season where it is rain central up in British Vancouver.
Yeah.
So, yes. And we were, yes, like, how did you get any scenes where it didn't look like it was raining? Because you must have been like every gap that there was sunlight, you ran and to roll camera.
Well, it rains and then it doesn't rain. And obviously things are cut out of continuity, mm-hmm, because you're shooting coverage. So it's raining on somebody's side of the coverage. It's not raining on somebody else's. But you just roll with it. It's just the, it's just moist up there.
I'll tell you what, that's the first time you'll hear a Californian cussing about sunshine. You should have heard our DP Faluna, like, yeah, no, son, go away, son. I'm like, really? Oh, we need that sun, bro. Don't do it. He's like, oh, damn it. I'm like, really, Faluna? You know, you're pooping on the sun gods, man. Need this.
Sorry, Tim. I can only control so much. I can't control the sun.
Right, exactly. And he goes ranting away, and I'm just like, thank God the sun's out, Faluna. But
bless it.
It was tough. I began to feel like a trout after a while, living under a river called Vancouver. So it was tough, but it was also epic. I mean, as hard as rain is to film in, it is extremely cinematic.
It does look beautiful. Awesome. It is. Going back into asking when to start it, it's about 6 months after the last scene that we see at the end of season two. So why was that the sweet spot for you guys story-wise to bring it to that place?
I mean, it just felt like the story wanted a pause in the timeline and wanted
a breath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to let the garden was sowed and to let it flower and spring a bit. And, you know, we also have this thing that we're dealing with every season. With these damn adorable kids keep growing up. So, you know, so that was taken into consideration, too, because there's a layoff and we knew the kids were going to come back and look that much older. And you can stretch credibility so much. But really, it just felt like the story wanted it. Mm-hmm. Wanted, you know, a lot of the TV shows that we follow and are fans of ourselves as audience members take these opportunities between seasons to jump forward. And in storytelling, they call that the off-screen movie, and, mm-hmm, and letting fans sort of think about frames that weren't shot, you know, the story that happened in the in-between there. And I think that's fascinating, and catching up with the moments and dropping our audience into the story and letting them try to catch up to it and figure out what's going on and how long they've been there and, you know, what's happening and why everybody's so buddy-buddy with Snyder. And he seems to have
cooking eggs.
He's cooking eggs. He's
cozy.
Making breakfast and hunting bears and all that stuff that
Peter
put into his contract. His contract just said that he had to look as cool as Josh Holloway.
I saw with the 5 o'clock shadow, looking a little rugged. I like it.
He rocks a flannel shirt.
He does rock the flannel shirt.
I got to say, man, Peter is no joke now. We coined a new nickname for him this year, and it's stuck like glue because he is the Stallion. The Stallion.
Love it.
Yeah.
That was in his rider, right? That was...
He does. He's tough. I mean, I drug him all over that mountain, and he's a stallion. He just, and then the next day he's out skiing in Whistler. We're like, are you resting? Are you covered? Oh, shit, I went skiing this morning. I'm like, what?
Yep.
So the Stallion is on fire.
That's what they called him at Juilliard. So just really, he just continued on the tradition.
That's because he was an Equus.
Oh.
Someone needs to show me the videotape of that. So let's talk about the Bowmans, because they seem pretty stable, even though this is Will and Gracie are super strong. We've got Katie and Bram still in their kind of same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Charlie seems a little bit still, not quite 100% after what he went through in Santa Monica. But just in terms of the dynamic of showing, they're still a strong family.
Yeah. And the Bowmans are getting it again. You know, they're on.
Yes.
They're all romantic and shit. That's important. That's important.
Finding those little moments.
I mean, this goes back to your previous question about why advance the story for 6 months, which is you didn't want to start in the same place we started season two emotionally, which is coming almost a direct pickup coming right out of Will and Katie in conflict.
Yes.
It felt really helpful to be able to reverse that arc and have them start from an actual happy place, you know, feel the understanding and the structure of this family and why these people work well together. We've never really had the opportunity to do that. So that's kind of the hard reset allowed us to kind of drop you in with some of these conflicts resolved into an entirely new situation where they are essentially happy.
Yeah. It's so great to see them happy. The end of last season was rough on all of them.
Yes. I really loved the beginning and how they chose to do that. For that reason, I really felt that the show needs a breath. It needs a breath so people could regroup emotionally so we can drag you down again.
Yes.
No. Yes, we build you up to break you down.
You need to breathe in a show, and it was beautiful and reestablished that core family love that is there.
Yes.
Know, that we're fighting for. So
yes, as you said, you guys have a little kissy time, but then we get some raptus interruptus because fun. And that was actually opened up to a really amazing sequence where we get that field sequence.
Yeah.
So we're all big sci-fi nerds here. So I want to get from Wes and from Ryan. We mentioned last season that a drone walker was something that was talked about but not seen. So what was the design process for you guys and what that was going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, this is a toy that we've been really building towards for two seasons now. And, you know, people ask, well, why would they need walker drones if they had flying drones? And the answer is because they're awesome.
Yes. I need
that's
one.
I like that.
No, I mean, because they're awesome. You know, we know that they have this autonomous fleet of enforcement vehicles and they use aerial drones that are contained within the walls to patrol the colonies. And then outside, they have these autonomous patrolling walker drones that mm-hmm. obviously have, you know, are much bigger than the flying drones, but also have different abilities and also orders, protocols mm-hmm. that they're executing. So you get to see a little bit of that in this episode. But we wanted to look reminiscent of the aerial drone.
Yeah.
And build off of that design. So it was actually Ghost, our awesome visual effects partners that have been with us since the pilot.
Yeah.
They designed the original aero drone. We had a science fiction designer do the 2D design on the cool. on the walker drone, but then Ghost built and articulated it, and you can just tell they move the way they move. I mean, Ghost does that incredibly well. So we were very excited the first time we saw that big boy walk onto the screen because it was played by a Canadian PA.
Who's very into it.
He's super into it.
He had done some mime work in his background. Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually, I think we should, as a companion to this podcast.
He had a beard and all.
Yeah.
Super scary.
Well, we should upload video of what poor Josh and Sarah were acting against, because if you thought these guys were good before, you'll really appreciate that they were afraid of a man holding a steel rod with a tennis ball on top of it.
It's the tennis ball. It gets me every time.
And stalking around in method like he himself was a drone. I mean, really, he went to like motion performance school because he really...
He did, man.
Really
did.
Owned it.
I describe it as prancing.
Yeah. We're very proud.
I want to see a prancing drone walker now.
Yeah. I remember just a little tidbit there. Do not follow Holloway when running from a walker drone, because I didn't pilot the path. And I was like, well, which way of camera should I? How about down this way? And they're like, sure. And I just take off running and disappeared, dropped into a creek.
Oh, no.
And then Sarah was right behind me. She dropped on top of my back into the creek. We're like, oh,
so, oh God.
Watch where you run from the walker drone. You will disappear, man.
Glad there was a second take.
That's Holloway, though. He's ready to leave at a moment's notice. So
that's it.
Camera be damned.
I'm there. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
We should also thank the fans for the off-season bake sale to help us pay for the walker drone.
Yes. That takes extra. That's a little more budget than usual. Absolutely. But, you know, honestly, that leads right into the amazing sequence where Snyder and Will are on that lookout. And we get a lot of bells and whistles when we get to see that ship go down and then the drones coming and everything that they're from their vantage point. There's a lot of cool stuff that is unpacked in that, where we learn what the rumors of the factory was actually for. Snyder being able to tell Will for the first time some of the things that we haven't exactly known, but have a little bit more of an idea. So knowing that that was a great sequence for you guys to not only visually, but also anecdotally give us a little bit more information on mythology, what do we need to know that actually really sets up this season?
Well, once again, it's a different storytelling modality, so we don't kind of get trapped in what we were in the previous two seasons, where we give you a huge amount of information at the top of the season, but it comes from an unreliable narrator mm-hmm. in the source of Snyder. So you're trying to figure out, you've seen these things, and you can interpret them however you want, and you've gotten information from him, but a lot of the story of the season becomes about confirming it and understanding what it means. So you don't have to be locked into the same holding away information and, you know, dripping it out bit by bit. It's a, you know, just a different, it's kind of refreshing to be able to tell a story this way instead of the other way.
Definitely. How long have you guys been thinking that rather than it just being humanity versus the raps, that there's something else?
Well, we did a tremendous amount of work at the top of the series, really, you know, once we had the pilot standing, to figure out the big mythology and the pieces of the science fiction backstory to what's going on, so that we could build towards something, so that we weren't just making things up as we went along. And sure, you know, it evolves and it changes, and you think of point A and point B, but you don't realize the points A1 and B2 and all that along the way. So certainly things have evolved that we didn't all see in advance. But the big bullet points were all laid out from the beginning. And this is a big one that we've sat on for 3 years now. And it's the time to understand what's going on and time to reveal it, because things are going to change. And your understanding of what, you know, now that we've left this one colony where all POVs inside of Los Angeles were just based on the information that was available there. But now we have characters running around the outside. We're going to meet people that have never been inside a colony that have knowledge that that is different than what they've known, and then people possibly from different colonies. So the scope of the world is expanding. So thus the scope of knowledge has to expand along with it.
I really like the way the show from season one, from the beginning, has played with, perspective. What is right? What is wrong? It depends on what perspective you're looking at. And the arrival of a new enemy. Who's wrong now? Now you thought the IGA was so evil and you had a clear enemy. And now you're like, oh, shit.
Yes.
Maybe they're not terrible. Maybe they're necessary. So I love the way the show does that with relationships across the board. And I think with this addition of the other enemy, it does it again in a big way. Now we're unclear who we should be mad at.
And this is also a big theme we want to explore this year, which is, you presume because of the POV of the show for the first two seasons that it's human-centric, this is a human story.
Right.
And what is interesting to me about this shift is you suddenly realize that maybe we're just bit players in a larger drama.
Yeah.
And that you have always assumed, because it's from the point of view of the Bowmans, that, you know, ultimately it's going to be about the Bowmans. But you realize that you are kind of powerless to affect these larger events. And that theme interests us enormously in terms of thinking not just about science fiction, but about the current moment.
Us humans always trying to make it all about ourselves. It's always us. Well, let's talk about someone that does like to make it about themselves, Uncle Alan. As duplicitous as always, we knew him clicking his little button at the end of season two in the finale in the car, that he's not being completely honest with anybody about why he's in that car and what's happening. And he may have opened the episode making eggs, and he may have a relatively good relationship with the Bowman kids. But this is different. We also see that he's really bonded with his family. He's literally lived under the same roof with them. Is this the same old guy? Or is this maybe a little bit of a different Snyder?
Well, Snyder is, you know, he's certainly evolved since we met him, but he's always been a human being. He's not a James Bond villain. There are distasteful aspects of his personality and his morality. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's a real person. Yeah. So he has emotions, and he's capable of empathy. And yeah, he has a real relationship with those kids. Doesn't mean he's not going to sell them down the river at the first chance he has, if it means saving his own skin. That's a complicated part about Snyder's character. And a lot of the collaborators that we meet in the show, at least the ones that we are able to get inside their POV and understand, because we're trying to put, you know, as Wes just was saying, everybody's role in this larger ecosystem. We're trying to just put human beings under extreme pressures, extreme moral pressures, and see how they react. And there are not people that are going to be fully lawful good and fully chaotically evil, to use some D&D pulls as Wes nods off next to me. But Snyder's always been a human being. And because of that, I think he's one of the more popular characters with the audience, because they see that there is conflict and good in him. And he's constantly at war with it. And his bravery only will take him so far in these cases. So all the characters get put under extreme pressure this season, as they always do. But I think Snyder in particular is forced to go through a real evolution and really decide at a couple of pivot points this season who he truly is.
Right.
And I don't even think he knows yet.
No.
I mean, that's the thing about Peter as an actor, is that he can be incredibly likable in situations you would not like other people in. I mean, for example, writing the scene for him where he's carrying water was probably the most delightful thing we did at the top of the season. And we're shooting that scene that day, and it's splashing all about. And Peter sits down to me kind of sadly and says, you know, in the third season of every show is when the writers figure out that the more they abuse my character, the more the audience seems to like it. And I said, I'd love to tell you, Peter, that's not going to happen anymore, but...
Wrong.
Yeah. Yep.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, in fact, David Shore took Wes and I out to lunch and gave us some pointers on
how just, to abuse him
even
more.
Yeah, just really hit the pressure points, really get the most out of him as an actor.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. That was the thing about Sawyer, too, because he was such an ass. People love to see him beat down. It's true.
How is it with, Will's not stupid, and he's very savvy, even though in this episode he's expressing that he likes the ability for the Bowman family to kind of have a relatively settled place where they have a little bit of control over the environment. Do you feel like, Will is also maybe a little less worried or more worried or just not showing it in the first episode?
No, I think Will is very much, he has his own code, and that gets in his way because he believe somewhere in that other people have a code. And he's human, you know. It's like if someone shows love towards your child, you can't help but go, okay, they're all right. They're being nice to my child, and I'll accept them more because I see that that is genuine. And then living 6 months together, Snyder is so brilliant as a character because he is genuine that way. He's just a survivor. And, you know, he's surviving actually in that moment. And the best way to do that is to be genuine and be a part of the family. And he did that. Now, when we started, of course, Will was much more wary. But now you're 6 months in. You're 6 months in the woods. Things are going really well. He hasn't shown that he's betrayed us in any way. I mean, it's 6 months. It's not like a week went by. So I feel like Will definitely has dropped his guard as far as Snyder is concerned. And then he gets a little reminder when they go up to the tower to see the ship crash and the drones attacking. And he gets all this new information. He's like, we've been living together 6 months.
And you don't tell
you
me this?
Tell me any of this? You know, so you get a little taste of, oh, yeah. And Snyder.
It never came up, Will.
You didn't ask.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, really, dude? Okay. Now I know who you are again. So it's I love that play back and forth because between Will and Snyder, because since the beginning, it's a lot of stress and a lot of strain and a lot of BS to deal with Snyder, but he has helped me in the past and my family and saved them, you know, at times. So as much as I don't trust him, there is that.
Yes.
And that carries weight for a father, I guess.
So let's round out the episode with that amazing sequence where Will goes out into the field and actually face the Walker drone, and you blow away the gray hats, the new chasers of the Bowman family. Obviously, we saw you on the wall, and the drones purposely did not kill. We know at the end of the season that Broussard and Will both have special dispensation. We don't really know why and what that exactly means. And then for you to go out and stand in front of Katie.
Well, you can't market the show without them, so.
Exactly. Not so much.
Yeah.
And that great little throwaway line where you go like, yeah, happened before. It's still a great moment to watch it play out. The kind of trust that you have in that moment that Katie's going to be okay by you putting yourself in front of her. And what does that mean in terms of also Will's trust in his own safety as he move forward? You know, that there's confidence enough to stare down the mechanical bull.
This happens a lot in the show and makes perfect sense in reality. The Bowmans don't have it all planned out and mapped out. You've got to just go for it at times, and especially when you're under attack. And at this point, I think he becomes instinctual. He's like, what are my chances against the gray hats? Well, they're human. They're going to shoot me.
Right.
They're going to shoot me. There's no, and they're going to kill my wife. So I do have the experience with the drones. I do know that they want me in one of those chambers because they tried to do it in season two, tried to shock us down and all that. And they had the chamber out there. You know, we knew that. So we have this suspicion, Broussard and I both. They let him live.
Yep.
That they want us for something bigger. So that was a huge gamble but a better one than the other option, which is just to get killed.
Bullets are definitive, yes.
Yeah, so he went for that, for what he thought in his instinct, his gut, might work. And by luck, it did. And a lot of that is just decisions. A lot of the Will Bowman decisions, unfortunately, because they happen so quickly and all together, have to be an instinctual nanosecond decision and hope for the best. So, yeah, that's kind of where that went. And going forward, yes, I think he's just leaning into the fact that he has no option and just go with your instincts, because it's very confusing all the way around. So that's kind of where he operates.
Yeah.
Ryan, now make it sound intelligent, would you?
No, I mean, I think from the character perspective, you know, Will's character's perspective, that pretty much captures it. I mean, they don't know what's going on. And I mean, that's part of the thing that the show has been very successful at is putting the audience into the POV of a specific character. We are not an objective show. Mm-hmm. We don't show things, you know, outside of our little teasers and things like that, that give the audience a major leg up on any one individual character. In a large way, they're experiencing the show as our characters are experiencing it. So things are slowly being unveiled to them. But there's also,
right,
you know, unreliable aspects of it, that rumor and supposition and all these things that nobody has the definitive,
right,
real definitive answers. I mean, we haven't really met anybody in the show that has all the answers.
No, not
we,
at all.
We do meet somebody later this season that seems to know more than anybody else than we've met to this point. But, you know, Will and Katie kind of know just as much as you, the viewer, does at this point.
Right.
But yeah, we do know that they have been preserved first by the aerial drones, now by the Walker drones. There's a reason for it, and the answers to that reason are coming.
So last shot of the episode, we get a little window of some definitely not alive, very mushy-looking thing inside of it. Katie goes, I wonder if that's what they look like. Hopefully not.
There's a writer from season one.
That's what we do with our writers.
That's what happens, folks, when your deadlines are not met. So we obviously get a tiny taste of some type of organic matter. But what was the thought of, like, again, you're letting us see little pieces of this alien culture. Was it just important to us to know that there's an organic matter associated with them?
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the ship that you see in obvious distress,
yes,
flying over the cabin in this episode is obviously different than anything that we've seen before.
Totally.
The design seems different. The wrap stuff, the drones, the walkers, even the transport ships that we've,
right,
seen, the autonomous ships, they all have that similar kind of insectoid, cycloptic kind of design to them. This thing is different.
Yes.
It looks different. That's intentional. The pod on the ground is different. And then what you see inside is obviously intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
We know from the finale last season that whatever is in the suit that we've seen before is not organic, or at least we haven't seen anything organic in there. There's not a googly-eyed alien hiding under the face shield. So, you know, these are all breadcrumbs being laid. And as Wes said earlier, very smartly, and I think was one of our plans for the season, to just dump a lot of seemingly disconnected information on the audience all at once in the first couple of episodes, and then let them start sorting through it, as our characters also have to. And that's part of the fun of the season, is, you know, it's all going to kind of be laid out. By the end of the season, you'll sort of know where we are, so that from here on, it's less about just uncovering the past and more about figuring out what we have to
what
do,
are we gonna do
in
about
the
it?
Present and the future.
Yeah.
But this is the beginning of that. And there's a lot of stuff layered in here in the first episode. So please go back, study it,
rewatch,
freeze frame it,
take notes,
especially in the Live Plus 3 window. And we will, you know, there'll be rewards to come.
We want to hear from you, fans, about your intriguing questions about what you dissect and put together. And Wes?
A final note about that pod, I just want to say that it's challenging to move to a new city with a new design team and new production team. And I think that, you know, those last couple of shots are indicative of the quality of people we were able to find up there who didn't.
The best people.
The best people. That know how to deal with rain.
They do. They throw up their umbrellas. But I mean, the design work this season is really, really special.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah.
I want to thank all of them.
And yes.
I think you're going to look forward. You're really going to enjoy it.
I met, actually, strange and funny enough, at the wrap party, I met the guy who built it and the girl who painted it.
Ah.
And I was like, thank you, guys. That thing looked amazing. They're like, thank you. Thank you. So you rarely get to actually see them, the folks that design these beautiful set pieces and so forth. So I was really glad I was able to thank them in person. So it was good.
Awesome. Well, guys, I will we'll end on that note. And again, amazing job bringing the show back and just giving us all kinds of new things to suss out. And definitely, Josh, amazing job with, as always, leading the Bowmans. And we're on the road now at the end of this episode. And so, you know, it's very exciting to see what's going to happen to the family.
I'm sure it's all smooth sailing.
Of course. No, it's good. It's all easy. Super, super. It's trout and easy walking all downhill, not uphill ever.
Sunshine
all the time. Thank you so much for being with us, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, y'all. Thank you so much, y'all. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Ryan, Wes, for all of your insight, giving us some little tidbits to think about as we move forward. And we will talk to you next episode.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Colony fans, for coming back and listening to us for our first episode of the new season. We really appreciate you coming back and being part of this show. If you do like what we're doing, please leave a review on whatever service you're listening to us on, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Let us know in the comment section of our Sci-Fi Wire blog what you'd like us to ask, or find me on Twitter at my handle, at Tara D. Bennett. Or use our hashtag ColonyCast. Thanks again to my wonderful team for making sure we sound as wonderful as we do. Producer Bartley Taylor, our producer and editor Paul Terry, and our mixer and masterer Dave Draper. Thank you guys, we sound awesome because of all of you. And hopefully you guys will stay with us all season long, season 3, Colony, the official podcast.